Happy Friday, NDL. Outliers are back, ready to talk some Group of Five action. Block Four almost on its way out, getting ready to start Block Five. Got some big games on the horizon. Conference races are knee deep right now, so a lot to talk about. Coach Vic, how you doing tonight?
I'm good on this Friday night. You know, Block Four is wrapping up. Block Five, we're about to get into tomorrow. So, lots of fun.
Oh, yeah. And everyone's going to start getting stressed out over games. When goals are
in effect. When goals are definitely in effect.
Yep, I know I'm not the only person counting and looking at conference play. I got to hit those conference goals, too. And it was just fun seeing what everyone has going on in each conference. Fun race.
Yeah, I was looking at it during the USF UCF game. I was looking at bowl schedules like, yep, I gotta hit these goals.
Yep, gotta get to six. Some cases five, but six just looks better, you know?
Oh, mine's is outrageous. I gotta get to eight.
Oh. Yeah, good luck with that.
Yep.
Well, I guess technically, this is the midway point of the season. There's seven blocks, and most people try to get their blocks or their buys early in the season. Some of us aren't as fortunate, but I feel like most teams have played around six games or are trying to at least get to six games. So let's call this the first half recap. With that said, we're going to look and see if there's, you know, maybe some teams that I don't want to say disappointing. I feel like that's a negative word, but just going into the season that like, man, I really thought that they were going to have a solid year in terms of, you know, getting off to a good start, at least. Doesn't mean that they can't. There's still half a season to go. Just teams I'm surprised that maybe don't have the record that I thought they would have. Go first. I'm going to shout out Mr. Coach Bear Ass in New Mexico. I mean, this is a negative shout out, I guess, but I mean, he's a cool dude. Enjoyed playing him many a times over our NDL careers. And right now he's 1-4. And it's been tough. I've been able to watch some of his games. And I just, man, him coming into the season, second season with them, usually once you have a team, you kind of get what works with them at the end of that first season. So going into season two, hey, I know it works. Maybe we can sprinkle in some other things. You really get a full grasp of what's working. It just hasn't clicked for him this year. He had that crazy game against Liberty to start, one of those games that probably kicking himself over. He did bounce back with a win right after. But, man, the defense has been struggling. The offense really has struggled, though. Since the start of Block 2, he's only been able to average just over 10 points a game. And all of his games have been on the road. He hasn't even been able to play in front of the home crowd yet. Maybe that'll help get him going. But the quarterback play has got to help, too. Dampier has just not had the season that you would be hoping that he would have, and I'm sure not the season Coach Barras was expecting. 49% completion percentage, and then that TD interception ratio is 7-6. So he's just missing a lot of throws from the games that I've seen. And Wysong could use some help. You know he's going to get a lot of the defensive attention because of his speed. Someone else has got to step up and kind of help take the pressure off both him and Dampier to help get that offense going.
Another team that has been a disappointment is Coach Shady Nasty over there in Memphis. He is currently 0-3. That's pretty bad. 0-3, no wins yet. Where is the defense? He has given up 40-plus in every game this season. He's gone over – the defense has given up over 50 twice, including the last game against Jokers in South Florida. I got to protect the ball better. He's averaging 3 turnovers a game. That's not good. You at least want to average 1. But 3 is just way too much to overcome sometimes. 47, he scored 47 points against USF. The offense is going to look better through the rest of the schedule in conference play because of the roster talent that he has on his team. One of the better rosters in the American Conference. So he could still potentially be a spoiler to the top teams in the American Conference.
Yeah, that conference race is crazy. And he's, yeah, if you're going to score a lot of points, sometimes turning the ball over isn't bad, but man, it's when the turnovers come, and that's definitely been a problem for Memphis. They always seem to come at the worst time. Oh, we'll see what it looks like when he gets into conference play. Speaking of conference play, another team that's going to be getting into it here fully shortly will be San Diego State. Still has a game against Washington State coming up, so that'll be out of conference. But man, I definitely was not expecting him to be 1-3. And in the manner that he's lost his games to have been hurtful. The Indiana and Miami game, especially Miami, had a big lead at the half. Miami got rolling. He was able to stem the momentum, but he just wasn't able to close it out. And it was the same thing against Indiana. Had the lead late, couldn't hold on. So their inability to close out those big games, you look at, hey, you win those two games, maybe that game against Hawaii turns out a little bit different. The perception of San Diego State's looking different right now. It's just a tough start to the season for them. And to lose to Hawaii to start out conference play. So just a lot of negatives for the first third of the season for them. But one thing that will help getting into conference play, a lot of the coaches that are there are returning coaches. So they are guys that Big Z has seen before. So maybe just kind of have a little mental reboot here, get back on track, and have a good run in the Mountain West. Hey, still win the conference, and being a Mountain West champ would still be a good way to close out this season and this year's version of the game.
Now, we've talked about the biggest letdowns of the season so far. We're going to go ahead and flip it on the other side. The recurring question and the recurring theme as far as a top topic in this podcast is which G5 team is going to go undefeated this regular season here in season 32. And I'll go ahead and start first by picking our good friend Dr. Bush and the Fighting Chips over there in Central Michigan. He has Bowling Green and Miami, Ohio left, but fairly an easy schedule. He got his hard part of the schedule out the way. Got his scare out of the way as well with South Alabama to kick off the season. Did play Barkley, somebody he may play down the line in the conference championship. Got that win out the way. I remember him saying that he was very nervous about that game because Barkley is a good player. So he was just making sure that he was in, you know, tip-top form for that game. But the rest of his schedule really is in his favor, unless he plays completely different or has a complete collapse in one of these games down the stretch. He's going to most likely be undefeated to end the regular season.
Yeah, he's got a great shot at it for sure. Couple of close games, a game against Ohio, but able to make the plays that need to be made at the end, and that's a sign of a good coach. And just that something is. I want to add, the game against Barkley, I don't think I even mentioned it when he played. One of the most entertaining games that I watched in terms of the coach talking on the mic. The calm excitement from him. Like you could tell he was excited throughout the game and he was locked in, but just like the calm yelling was entertaining.
He was definitely the nighttime DJ for your local R&B radio station. He definitely was that.
Listening to him on the mic during games is great, man.
Yes it is. This is pure entertainment. I love it. I was fascinated on the conversation even before the game. Like before the game, the conversation before the game was just excellent.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the easy one. There's one conference that's making it kind of tough because there's just a lot going on. I'll jump to the AAC for a sec because you've got three undefeated teams right now: FAU, Tulane, and South Florida. And I'm not sure if any of them will go, but it's tough to pick. I'm looking at Tulane. They're an interesting one because they do play South Florida. So someone has to lose. So one of those two teams won't go undefeated by default. He still will have to play Charlotte and Rice. Charlotte's offense is definitely picked up in the second half of the season, so he's got his offense back on track. Rice, Boss Ranger. Now we're getting to the point where the high schoolers are about to be out of school, so we'll have more time to focus depending on when that game's played. And then that looming game with Texas A&M. That's a really big game. They have a big win against Florida. That's going to be a tough team to play in terms of talent, SEC school. I don't know if he gets there, but if Tulane would, I think that would make the playoff conversation very interesting.
I feel like if Tulane beats A&M and runs the gambit, he could possibly be in potential for a top four seed. You don't have any better resume than him. As far as one, like I said, if he beats Texas A&M and runs the gauntlet, so that's beating USF, that's potentially beating FAU in a title game, maybe. With Texas A&M, and then his other wins over Power Four conferences, no one has a better schedule outside of certain SEC and Big Ten teams that'll qualify for a top four spot, in my opinion.
Yeah, because depending on when they play, you're looking at USF would be ranked. Well, it will be a ranked game because that was from last block. FAU could be ranked. Texas A&M is ranked. And even if he played South Florida twice, a rematch in the conference championship, that could be a ranked matchup as well. So that could be a really interesting conversation for sure. And I guess, that'd be a really interesting conversation. Anybody else that you got your eye on?
ODU, Mr. List guy himself, Pirate. He has a list. If you know about the list. He plays Marshall and James Madison. My pick to win the Sun Belt. he plays both of those. Those are his hardest games left. He is undefeated. He does have a chance. ODU has a history going back to season 31 and the Sun Belt in general, going back to season 30 of getting a CFP team out of that conference. So him and Devin Roche can run the table if they can get over Marshall and James Madison.
Yeah, that could be an interesting one. Well, there's another team to look at too. I'm potentially going to steal your thunder because we were talking about this before the show, and we both probably are watching the game on another tab. UTEP.
Oh, we definitely are.
UTEP's about to punt the ball back early in the fourth quarter. They're up 28-25 against Western Kentucky. This is one of those live updates based off of our pre-show research. Because looking at their schedule, hey, they're undefeated now. You've got Western Kentucky and Middle Tennessee, who Maverick has had kind of an up-and-down season, but he's capable of getting that passing attack going, so that's a very dangerous game. Plus, the scary part is there's two open teams, so as we're still getting new guys coming into the league, it's an interesting thing because middle of the season, the game cycle is almost over. Anyone that's joining the league is probably someone that plays the game on a regular basis. So it's a big question mark for those games. You don't know what to expect. So maybe one of those teams gets filled and gives him a game. I don't know. But clearly right now, the focus is on trying to get by Western Kentucky. It was just a 3-point game with 6 minutes to go, 6.5 minutes to go. So I guess we'll know if they'll still have a shot in 10 minutes.
We will continue to update this score live on the podcast. It will be kind of interesting once you hear the playback of this tomorrow morning or during the course of the weekend that we're updating this live game. But, you know, typically you don't get too many live games while we're doing podcasts. So, yes, it is 28-25, and we will continue to update you on that score.
Well, is there anyone else? I feel like it's just the AAC, but like South Florida's just in a weird spot because they kind of dictate what happens because they play Tulane and Florida Atlantic. Those three teams are definitely runners.
I feel like with South Florida, they also could potentially have a chance of getting possibly a top four, but I don't know. He's been pretty much ranked in the bottom half of the poll all year. But because of that, I think he has a chance. And like you said, it goes the other way around. When he plays Tulane, that's a ranked matchup. When he plays FAU, that's most likely going to be a ranked matchup. He has already beaten his Power Four teams in Pittsburgh and UCF. So he's going to have a strong case as well as far as potential top four, but mainly CFP chance. Especially, I feel like if what could potentially happen as well, because Central Michigan does have a weaker schedule, I do pose this question. Would you take one of the American teams over Central Michigan?
You legitimately took the words out my mouth because I was thinking about this as you were talking. I'll even go a step further. The AAC. So I was in this conference last season, and just looking at it from top to bottom, you obviously are top heavy. I'm not meaning any disrespect to any of the other teams, but you have three undefeated teams right now at the top. But you also have Rice, who I expect to finish with a winning record and get going. Charlotte has looked good so far. Tulsa has looked good so far. So it's not just the teams at the top, just the value of the conference as a whole will be valued more than it was, say, last season when you had me and Pat at 11-1. So would a one-loss team that wins the conference, would you take that team over undefeated Central Michigan? Probably be an interesting conversation.
I feel like this, it was highly rated last year with you guys, you and Pat, because of the 11-1 thing, and yet you guys facing each other being a ranked matchup in the conference championship over ODU. But it was just because the schedules wasn't favorable, and the loss you did take and the loss Pat did take was pretty bad in the end. And so it was like, it wasn't like it was a bunch of Power Four teams in the non-conference that you faced, and some of the conference opponents that you faced, you wasn't able to face. So it was a little different matchup, but with this side around, I would lean into getting an American team in over Central Michigan. And that's no slight to Chip at all. It's just when you look at Tulane's and potentially USF, and FAU would legitimize itself with two or maybe three ranked wins at the end of the year, that's a lot going for yourself.
Oh, yeah. It's the AAC definitely, they have the potential to break that streak with the Sun Belt. It's we'll just have to see how things play out, because they're going to have to play against each other. And then you're in the position of, okay, I need to qualify for the championship game, so I need the rest of the conference to play well to bring up the stock in the conference, because that is going to play a factor in the conversation as well, too. So if you have the middle guys, you know, this team was ball eligible, this team was ball eligible, they knocked off this squad, or we were able to get a convincing win against this team, that definitely goes in your favor. So that's going to be a fun conversation and something to watch as we wind down in the second half of the season, for sure.
Definitely, definitely. An update, it is tied up 28-28, UTEP over Western Kentucky. Not over, but it's tied with 4:58 left to go.
UTEP trying to move the ball, see if they can get the lead back. They're in inside 35. Well, since we're talking about conference championships a little bit. Sorry, just see this run so it's inside the 10. It's hard not to this game right now because it's an important game for them.
It is. It is.
So, Party Crashers. I feel like at the beginning of the season, we had some things that we expected. You know, we expected Chip to play well in the MAC. He has. We expected, well, Old Dominion, I think, was the team that you had pegged at the beginning of the season. He's looked good so far. Mountain West, we had maybe Boise and San Diego State, maybe someone else, a third team in the mix. But now that we've gotten into some games, there's some teams or conferences that have situations where we might have something unexpected happen or someone that can crash the party for a conference championship game and really kind of blow some stuff up. So I'll start with this one, the Mountain West. I find this one pretty interesting.
I love it. Go ahead. I love it.
So you have Boise and San Diego State, which are probably the favorites in the eyes of many. Or if you at least had to name three teams, at least two of them would be those two. So both teams out of conference is kind of irrelevant, but we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Boise, undefeated in conference play right now. San Diego State in kind of a tough spot because they took a loss to Hawaii. That's the team that they've been able to beat the last couple of seasons. So they're already behind the eight ball. And there's a slight problem. Colorado State's undefeated in conference play, 2-0. Fresno State, undefeated in conference play as well. Now, those two teams do play each other, but the tiebreakers, because the conference is being so big, presents a problem because neither one of them play Boise or SDSU. And since those two teams will have to play each other, you run into a situation where we could have a really crazy tiebreaker where potentially CSU or Fresno State could finish with one loss, and we have a really ugly tiebreaker, which will have to go to the CFP probably, or San Diego State's in must-win mode against Boise because they may fall behind a team that they have no opportunity to play. So that conference, just watching how the next block or two plays out, is going to be really, really interesting.
It definitely is really, really interesting. It reminds me of when we were in the Mountain West and the last two blocks of the season, it was like a five-way tie for first. And then it sorted itself out, but then it became a three-way tie for first, and we had to go to the fifth or sixth tiebreaker to determine who got in the conference championship.
Yeah.
So that may be coming into play again this time. I love the fact that it's Colorado State and Fresno State, two of my favorite people in the league, Beer Cop and Wobbles. I love those guys. Love those guys. Love playing them. Love those guys. They are what the NDL is all about. Some people may say it's the top tier. No, these two guys right here embody what the NDL is all about. And I love them for that.
Oh, yeah. Tell you what, if we're drafting a team to go 100 versus 1 against a gorilla, I'm definitely bringing those two with me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wobble's coming off the top of the tree with it. I mean, you're going to have to protect the gorilla. I'm telling
you. Yeah. Oh, man.
With the other conference is the MAC conference. Could somebody spoil Dr. Bush's party? You got three new coaches in the league. We have Ohio, we have Akron, and we have Kent State. Am I right? The last one was Kent State as a new coach? I believe so. I have played Akron. He's a pretty fun dude as far as offensively. He could possibly put a scare in the old Central Michigan. Because he can have fun with it offensively. I have played him in a scrimmage. We had a lot of fun. I like to have fun in my scrimmages, and me and him had a lot of fun. And so he plays a favorable, exciting offensive style. So that could cause a little bit of a panic there. Ohio, Chip did play Ohio, and it went down to the wire. Like you said earlier, so they could rematch each other again, and that's intercepted. Oh, man. But they could play each other again for the conference title game. We will see. And, of course, you got our man Barkley. If he gets all his games in, I'm pretty sure he's going to be fighting to get another shot at Chip as well.
Yeah, I forgot about Barkley. And that's one of those, if you get a rematch, it's hard beating a team twice in most scenarios because you've seen what they can do. So the onus is always on the loser to adjust. And it kind of puts, depending on how the game goes, it may put the winner at a disadvantage because now you have to adjust to something new. Most people aren't going to come in and play exactly the same because they lost for a reason. You need to figure out what didn't go well. And in that case, it's probably, well, we couldn't stop the run. So now maybe we'll put more emphasis on the run game and force Emmanuel to pass. How does that go in a second matchup? But there's still two empty spots in the MAC too. So if they get filled, you're looking at a coach who's coming into the league. They're getting adjusted to the league and play style for sure. But they're also probably playing with a team that they have no idea what they're doing with because – I mean, let's be honest. Most of us, if we're gonna play in a game, we're probably not gonna pick a mid-major team. If we did an online dynasty, give it a couple seasons, you're bringing in recruits, so you're fitting the team, the talent of the team, to your play style. So this is a different scenario. You're trying to basically spending the whole season trying to get used to playing with a totally new team without having to play against top teams. So maybe one of those teams can figure it out. And then have some momentum going into the end of the season, get that other spot. Who knows what happens?
Big first down in the UTEP Western Kentucky game. That pretty much is going to do it there. He survived a scare there.
21-3 in the second quarter. That's enough. And I mean enough to get away with the win. So good win. Jackson, 158 yards on the ground, 2 TDs, your player of the game.
He definitely has a shot of becoming undefeated at this point now.
Yep. He can enter into the conversation as well, officially. Like, definitely. we had him in the notes, but like, oh, they're playing. So let's see how this pans out. Like,
it did. It was kind of a scare. It was a little bit of a scare there, but, you know, he came away with the victory.
That's what's important when you have those close games. I feel like it's something we talk about. I know it's supposed to be a group of five, but just talking about the coach, not the team. Talk about guys like Big Mike and Jiggy. They have that embodied in their gaming soul. When it comes down to the fourth quarter, they are both great coaches. But probably to me, even better than their user skills, even better than their play calling, is their calmness. They will not beat themselves. I feel like I can speak for myself. The fourth quarter, I make mistakes. I make stupid play calls. I overpursue. I do things, maybe not necessarily play out of character, but there might be situations where like you feel the pressure. I feel like those guys, like everything is just always the same for them. They'll never. You have to beat them. They will not beat themselves. So when you get into the fourth quarter, I love seeing teams face adversity and being able to find a way to win. It's a good quality to have.
Another coach that's non-G5 at this current moment, but definitely reps the G5 when he can, Coach Andy. He is cool under pressure. He is definitely cool. No matter how much he says he's not, or he's nervous, or he's that, he's very cool under pressure. I've seen a lot of his games this year, this season, and he's come back at least three different times from big first half deficits. So he's definitely cool under pressure.
Coach Dealer too, thinking about it. So you're looking at like transitioning to the G5. You just see UTEP close out a game, a tough one. We've seen Chip have to do it against South Alabama and against Ohio. We'll have to see someone do it in the AEC at some point when they start playing each other. So that's going to factor into how, you know, the projection of how these teams look going into the final stretch of the season for sure.
But yeah, true.
Speaking of the final stretch, maybe not necessarily final, but as we go into the next block, there are some interesting games. We got a couple pegged. You want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I'll go first on this one. The one that I like to... No, I'm going to say that one for last because we're going to put that one in the spotlight. I'm going to go with Boise State and San Diego State first.
Fun one.
This is a fun one. Yes, indeed. This is a fun one. This is a very key matchup as what we were talking about earlier with the tiebreaker scenarios and everything like that. This is definitely a make or break game for both teams. The Broncos, they are struggling. They come off a loss, a tight loss at Penn State. Those field goals were costly in the end. Some may say it's home field advantage. I say it wasn't, but, you know, tomato, tomato. Can they finally break the slump against the Aztecs? They have lost the last 2 years to the Aztecs twice, once in the regular season and once in the conference championship. Both teams have really struggled. San Diego State has collapsed against Indiana and Miami this year, as I just mentioned about the Penn State loss for Boise State. They have collapsed as well. So both teams have done the equal share of collapsing down the stretch of games. San Diego State already has a conference loss. Shout out to Jeff Daddy. At Hawaii, Chipono. Can he stop? Can Big Z stop Genty? Can Iraka stop Polk? Can they stop each other's run games? I'm going to say no. They cannot stop each other's run game. So the difference in the game is who's going to get the key stop? Because you know it's going to happen. Some play call is not going to work, or you're going to try to get too fancy, and it's not going to work. So who gets that key stop at the key time, and who makes enough plays in the passing game to get them over the stretch?
That's the key one for sure, because Hope, he's going to score at least once. I guarantee it. Somehow, he'll no matter what Boise does, he'll find his way open at least once. Genty, it just doesn't matter. He's at least going to break one. I mean, he ran for 400 yards against Hawaii. That game was depressing to watch. Like, I'm just looking at Jeff Day. I'm like, what are you even supposed to do? I don't know what you do. And the problem, the funny thing about this is, if you really look at it, San Diego State hasn't been able to stop Ginty yet at all. But on the other side, Boise also hasn't been able to stop Pope. So the question you bring up is fair. The passing game, who's supporting Cass is going to have the better game? Because we know those guys are going to produce. Can Madsen get other guys involved in the passing game? Will the run game for San Diego State get enough plays to keep Boise's offense off the field? Is it a defensive play? Like, someone else is going to have to be the reason why the team wins. The question is who? It'll be a fun one to watch. And it's important for both. But man, San Diego State, if they lose this game, like, I don't want to say it's a must win this early in the season because we're just about halfway through. But if they lose this game, I don't know if they're going to be able to compete for a spot in the Mountain West the way things are looking right now. Still a ways to go. The pitcher is still kind of fuzzy, but man, it's going to be tough if you're 0-2.
That is true. 0-2, that's a mighty hill to climb to try to get back into the conference race.
Oh, any
who you got in the game? Who you got in the game?
What we call friend loyalty. Friend loyalty over school loyalty. I have to go with Boise State. Because I don't want him to message me later saying I'm not supportive of my best friend. But I tell you, man, talking to him after the games against San Diego State, you can just feel the defeatedness, like just the frustration of being so close, but not being able to find a way to win. If there is ever a time, it has to be now, because Big Z's kind of got his back up against the wall. Maybe he makes a mistake. Maybe this just isn't his season. Like, you got to win this one. This has to be the one. If you don't do it now, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Boise State as well. I feel like you can learn something from a loss, and I feel like he learned something from that Penn State loss.
Get in the middle of the field for your kicks. I feel like that's a big takeaway from everyone from what I've seen in NDL Sports Center. Stay off the hash. Get in the center of the field, please. We'll see. It'll be a fun game. Definitely the Mountain West will be watching, and it should be a good matchup because their games have always come down to the last possession. So looking forward to another good one from them. Another game to look at and go to the AAC for a moment. We go to Charlotte at Tulane. Something a little bit different. Charlotte, undefeated in conference play. They had the struggles early. Or actually, they're not undefeated in conference play. I take that back. I believe they lost to... Did they lose to USF? Or do I have the wrong team? Can't remember.
Charlotte, I believe they did lose to USF.
Okay. So they have two losses. I know they lost the season opener, only put up 10 points. But the offense definitely has been rolling, for sure. They've been averaging 38 points after that loss. 10 points against Middle Tennessee, so they're rolling. Tulane, they haven't put up quite the numbers that Charlotte has, so it could be they're more balanced offensive and defensively. They did just squeak by UAB, so while they've looked good out of conference, UAB, a team with lesser talent, they had to go. We went into the fourth quarter with the game tied, scored, and they won that one by a touchdown. My question in this one is, Tulane's run game, will they be the difference maker? Because you're going to have to keep that Charlotte offense off the field. So can Hughes get going, slow down the pace of the game, limit the possessions, you know, try to get Charlotte to press? Because they're clearly going to be trying to score points, because that is pretty much the way that team is run all season. And then from the Charlotte perspective, Max Brown, can you protect the ball? lots of touchdowns, just a couple of interceptions. This is one of those games where he's going to be looking to pass. You got to stay away from the interception, especially the pick six. But you have to stay away from the interception. And it's going to be a fun matchup because Tulane's secondary has speed. So does Charlotte's receiving core. So who wins that matchup, that might dictate who wins this game.
By the way, to correct ourselves, Charlotte is also undefeated in conference. They have two out-of-conference losses.
Ah, okay. So now we're having more fun because they can be potential quote-unquote party crash in the AAC.
They are definitely the common link and the spoiler to the American Conference.
Oh, Tulane will be home for this one. Who do you think wins?
I think Tulane wins. I pretty much got him rolling. His wins in the non-conference impressed me a lot because it wasn't like I'm just going to squeak on by and get these wins. No, I'm going to dominate. So, yeah, those dominating wins against Power 4 schools, they really impressed me. So I'm going with Tulane. What about you?
I'll go with Tulane too, but Wes, you're on upset alert. You better watch out. This Charlotte offense is going to be the best offense you've faced to this point in the season. So if that defense is not playing well, Tulane does have the pieces to get into a shootout too, but that is not the way they want to win games. They better be careful with this one, because if Charlotte's offense gets going, Tulane is going to have a hard time getting this one. I think they will win, but he better be careful.
Definitely. You can go ahead and take the next one. I'm going to take the last one because we're putting it in the spotlight.
Okay. So I assume I know which one you're talking about. So I'll take Miami of Ohio at BMU. So, Coach Chip, they had a scare against Ohio. They snuck away with a win there, closed out that game in the fourth quarter. The question for the Chips, will the running game with Marion Lukes continue to lead the way? He's going to be a dark horse guy for the Heisman when you look at the group of five teams. One of the league leaders in rushing. He is the central focal point of the offense. He's been able to get going in every game. So will Miami of Ohio, the Redhawks, will they be able to slow him down? Speaking of running, they've been able to run the ball as well too, because Mosey has 762 yards on the ground. Also, the Redhawks have the second most first downs in the NDL. So what that means is time of possession is going to be in their favor, or at least it has been in their favor. They're able to slow the game down, limit the possession. So if this is a game that's a slow-paced game, if the Redhawks could slow down Luke, not saying stop him, but just slow him down some, this is one of those games where, hey, a big play here and there might be able to shift the tide. Does Emmanuel hit a big pass play? Davis has been sneaky. He's been a home run hitter in the passing game for the Chips. Can he do that here? Does someone else do something? I think CMU wins this game, but I'm really curious to see how the Redhawks go about attacking them both offensively and defensively. Because in terms of their makeup, just their play style, this seems like a game that might make it difficult for CMU.
Well, who do you got in that one?
I will go with CMU. I just, like, Luke's has been really good this season. And not just that, but the Chips, I feel defensively, when they need to make a play, those timely stops, whether it be a run stuff, you know, a deflection on third down or a pick, they find a way to get it done. I just think defensively, they'll make enough plays to get it. I think they'll go into the fourth quarter up and then be able to salt the game away. And I'll definitely be listening because I need that Coach Chip commentary. What about
definitely be listening to Coach Chip's commentary. I got CMU too. Luke's has been great. If he can get a few more touchdowns, he'll be on that Heisman list, by the way. He'll be in that top five for the Heisman list right there. He just need to get a few more touchdowns. I don't think Miami, Ohio has a chance, to be honest with you. I think it's going to be at least a 21-point blowout.
We'll have to see. We'll have to see. Well, there's one game left.
The last game on the docket is what we're putting in the spotlight. It is potentially a ranked versus ranked matchup. We'll have to see when the rankings come out tomorrow. But we have FAU with the high-powered offense, one of the most prolific high-powered offenses in the NDL this season, against South Florida, another high-powered offense. This is a potential showcase game for both of these teams. Like I said, even with the loss, and if you come back and win the conference championship game, the CFP still may be on the line if you have one of these losses. And this is maybe the one loss you would want to have. Of course, no one wants a loss. No one ever wants a loss. But it's not backbreaking if you lose this game. It's definitely a tiebreaker for the conference championship game. Both teams are undefeated this year. Like I said, the high power offense in Flancher and CJ Campbell, the 1-2 quarterback running back punch. I have Flancher in my top five for the Heisman. That's how much I think of him. He is definitely top five in the Heisman race as of right now. And CJ Campbell has almost 1,000 combined yards and 11 TDs to go with Flancher's play. You have Byron Brown. I know a little bit about Byron Brown because he definitely lit me up in the Beefy Cup. His connection to Sean Atkins has been lethal. They have hooked up for 8 touchdowns so far this season. Like I've said, and like we've continued to hammer home, both of these offenses have looked great. Joker's just put up 50. FAU almost averages 50 points. So it will be a lot of points in this game. What I feel like the X factor is going to be is Jalen Shuler for USF. He has 9 sacks, 4 interceptions, and 2 TDs. He's definitely on his way to getting some defensive awards at the end of the year, though, if he keeps going on this projection. Both teams, another key factor in that is field goals. We talked about that in the Boise SDSU game. Field goals is a must. If you think you're going to miss it, go ahead and center that ball in the middle of the field and take the field goal there, especially with those chip shots. You don't want to lose in a heartbreaking fashion over a chip shot field goal. You definitely don't. So that's another key factor is the special teams with field goals. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, special teams. I'm scared if it comes down to a field goal, because something I just thought about while you're talking is even a block, maybe a return. Like special teams, I feel like it's everything is always focused on the offense, and rightfully so, because you got to score points. But if you get down there, you've got to walk away with something. And in a game that could see a lot of points, a missed field goal, whether a block or, you know, just hitting upright or whatever, has a really big effect, because then it might mean you have to go for fourth down. So now you're calling plays for 4 downs. Are you saving your best play for 4? Does that lead to a mistake or getting sacked on 3rd down? Like, there's just so many special teams not doing its job impacts the game so much. I'm scared if this game goes to overtime, though, because if it does, we may set the NDL record. The way those offenses are clicking, we might be in store for like a 6 or 7 overtime game. I don't know what to expect.
If we get a 7 overtime game, it's going to be 101 to 99 at that point. It's going to be wow, because they could put up at least, and realistically, it could be like 62 to 60 or something, but they could both put up at least 40 by the end of the game. It could be a 49-42. You know, it definitely could be a shootout. I am highly, highly interested in this matchup. Like, that's why I wanted to put it under the spotlight. I am highly interested in this matchup. I've seen Jokers earlier today looking very impressive. He has looked impressive. I did apologize a few podcasts ago for not mentioning his name. And, buddy, I will never not mention your name ever again. Because you are awesome. Your offense is awesome. You've gotten key stops when you needed to. And Coach Jumper has lit the league on fire. So, both of you guys, shout out to both of you guys. I hope it's 56-49 in 2 overtimes. I'm just hoping for the best for this game. I mean, 6 passing touchdowns, no interceptions, all that good stuff.
Yeah, this is such a layered game because, one, this is a statement win. Whoever gets the win, this is a statement win. If it's FAU, like you said, we don't know if they'll be ranked quite yet. We'll know and. 12 hours or so. If FAU wins this game, this is definitely their statement win. Like, hey, this is the put us on the map game. South Florida wins. This is still an impressive win, especially with the high-powered FAU offense. And then the ability for both teams to do whatever's necessary on offense. Because usually you look at a high-powered offense, there's a key guy or potentially a certain connection in the passing game, maybe one or two guys, like, hey, if we can try to take one away, we can try to, scheme this guy out and see how we do against the other, or we can try to scheme out this running back. Both these offenses can run and pass the ball, and they do both well. So I don't know what to expect. Will one team try to slow the game down or just say, hey, whatever, we're just going to sling it all game and run when we have to? It's a really fun matchup for sure. Who you got in this one?
I'll take it a step further before I give you my pick. For FAU, it's a put us on the map page. For USF, it's a look at me now, take me serious. We are a threat type of game. And I got Jokers. I think he's going to pull it out. Like I said, another person that can be calm, you can tell from the podcast. He's the calmest one on the podcast. He's the most, like, ready. I feel like he knows that this is his time, and he's going to take full advantage of it.
I can't argue with you there. I would have to go with South Florida as well. This may be one of those games that comes down to who has the ball last. And if he has the ball, that calmness is going to play a big factor. He's not going to stress. He's not going to try to do anything more than what needs to be done. Like, really just take what's there, scheme up areas of the field to attack. His offenses look great so far. I hate to say this, but I know he's a USF coach, but somewhere in the locker room after this game is over, he'll find a spot to himself and he'll play Rocky Top on his phone. Doesn't want the players to hear it. No, it's hard to get that Tennessee out of him, but I think they'll find a way to win this game.
Definitely. They'll definitely find a way to win this game. It definitely did. Well, we got one fun topic left.
Yeah. So, since we missed last week, which is my fault, the headaches, not very helpful headaches and migraines. So, didn't get to have last week's show. So, I saved this for this week since, you know, everyone's excited about the NFL draft. Figured since we're talking about mid-major schools on this podcast, who are some of our favorite, not necessarily the best, but just who are some of our favorite guys to come out of mid-major programs. So I'll start, and obviously as an Aztec alum, I have to say Marshall Faulk.
Of course.
The best player to come from SDSU in football. I don't want to make a comparison with Tony Gwynn, but the best player to come from SDSU in football. And I had a little story that I want to tell too. So he personally is my favorite running back ever in the NFL. Like, I love Barry Sanders growing up. He's the one that really got me into football. But when I watched Marshall Faulk, like, man, this guy is so cool. Not only is he a threat every time he takes a handoff, but you're able to split him out in the screen game. Like, he is such a dynamic player. I don't know if anyone remembers the game All-Pro Football. I used to play a lot of NFL, the NFL 2K series, and their last football game they made was All-Pro Football. So,
one of the greatest games ever, by the way.
Yeah, if no one's played this game, let me give you the premise. So, you had legends and then you had regular players. So, when you constructed your team, you had two golds, I think it was three silvers and four bronze players. And then every other position was just an average player. Just, you know, a random, you know, player that was not a licensed player. Just, you know, whatever. My first pick every time was Marshall Faulk. Give me a running back who is a dual threat. I don't care what the rest of the offense has. That is a very dangerous weapon to have because you have to worry about him at all times. There is no break as long as he's on the field. Faulk is just, he's that guy for me.
I'm a slip in the ball knower fact of the week right here. He is, as far as his NFL career, he is the first running back with 100 catches on the season. Okay. He was the first running back ever to accumulate 100 catches during the regular season.
And there's so many ways, like literally split them out once, you know, you're lined up and now he's matched up against a linebacker. That's a dub. Screen game, swing pass, even just the check down could end up turning into a 30-yard play just because he's out in open space. Such a scary guy.
Definitely. A
couple other guys I'll mention. I won't go in as much detail. T.Y. Hilton for FIU. He played for the Colts. Man, dynamic player. I always remember him going after he'd score off a deep bomb, just, you know, the T.Y. in the end zone. Very dynamic player with his speed. Colt Brennan, rest in peace. One of my favorite. Like, I never really got into watching mid-majors. Not really until I got into the NDL, because now, like, I have to start caring about these teams. So it got me more interested in watching Brennan. He, I believe his senior year, finished third in the Heisman. And his junior year, he finished sixth. That Hawaii offense, that Hawaii offense was fun to watch. It didn't matter who they were playing against. They were just going up and down the field. Really fun watching him play. And then
his senior year was that magical greatest season ever, which is 2007.
Man, so many touchdowns. So many touchdowns for that offense. Good luck stopping them. And then the last one, a near and dear player close to my heart, tying it back to the NDL. Also FIU, Antoine Barnes. My very first season in the NDL, that was the team I had. Man, that team sucked. But we had impact players. And I don't know if anyone remembers the old school NDLers or hell, if you're just an old school NCAA player. Back in the PS2, they had the white circle. And when they were in the zone, that circle would pulse. Antoine Barnes was a menace. Every time he pulsed, it was a guaranteed sack. I didn't even have to watch. Like, I didn't even have to worry about anything past 5 yards. Just sit on everything short because he just literally walked into the backfield. Dude was insane. Had a solid career with the Ravens. Had over 20 sacks in his college career. Dude was a beast. Loved playing with him. What about you, Vic? What guys do you have on your list?
I have one of my greatest quarterbacks. I have him in the top 10. You can argue with your whole family. I don't care. You're not arguing with me. Ben Roethlisberger. He is a top 10 of all time to me. Just to me. That's my personal list. Like I said, you can argue with your family. I don't care. He put Miami of Ohio on the map. And the fact that he got drafted top 10, top 15, you know, first round out of the MAC as a quarterback, that in itself is amazing. I don't think that's been done since or probably before. Then you have Mr. Controversy himself, Antonio Brown, Big Ben's teammate for a lot of years.
I'm a Bucks fan. Why'd you have to do that to me?
You know, I love AD. It's just his off the field. I don't like of course, no one likes the off the field, but on the field, you can say he wasn't a menace. Even with your Bucks, still was a menace. He played for Central Michigan, if a lot of people don't know. He played for Central Michigan out of the MAC, fighting chips. I know Dr. Bush knows that, but he definitely played for a MAC school in college. DeMarcus Ware, personally one of my favorites, being a Cowboys fan. Coming out of Troy, right when Troy was transitioning from FCS to FBS in that time period, him and OC Umanyora were great for that team to transition over to FBS because they dominated on the defense.
Oh yeah,
I remember seeing him coming out as a kid and on the game when I was a kid. He had high ratings and everything like that and became a Cowboys legend for sure. And of course, I mentioned him last podcast.
That's why I didn't mention him. I didn't want to have to talk about him. I still have nightmares. Go ahead.
One of my favorite players of all time, Mr. Randy Moss, coming out of Marshall. Again, he's a top 10 overall player for me of all time. Love that guy. Like I said, you look up his 1997 stats, man. You look up his stats at Marshall for those 2 years, man. They are beyond video game numbers. A couple honorable mentions that I thought of right after I put them on, right when I was done with my list, was Terrell Owens, UT Chattanooga. People don't know that. A lot of people don't know he went to UT Chattanooga, but he did for college. Walter Payton, he went to Jackson State. And one of the GOATs, Jerry Rice, he went to Mississippi Valley State.
One thing that I've definitely seen when it goes to looking at NFL, because it's always talked about a lot when you have the draft, what translates to the NFL. It's really difficult to tell with certain positions for a lot of reasons, because you have to look at, do you have the coaching staff? Do you have a scheme that plays to their strengths, or at least that they can fit into? Do you have a coaching staff that can adapt their scheme to fit the strengths of the players? Man. And just what type of talent do you have there? Receivers is the one where it's like, man, if you have a star in college, it seems easier. I don't want to say it is for sure, because I don't want to be speaking absolutes, but a good receiver in college, it seems to translate well going to the NFL.
Yeah, to add to your point, it's as far as the scheme and the coaching, I feel like a key trait for coming from a small school or FCS or HBCU or anything like that, I feel like, is that player teachable? Are you teachable? Can you get coached up? Like, can you get coached up? That's a hidden trait. That's a part of IQ, because if you truly feel like you can get coached up and you get coached up with the right coaches, as you just said, then your knowledge of the game grows even higher. So by the time you are year five, year six, it's like clockwork to you.
Oh, yeah. And there's their extra chip on the shoulder, too, because you're coming from a smaller school where all these teams from power conferences, they get the spotlight. They're always on TV. They're always talked about and being praised. You play for a mid-major, you don't get to shine as much because, oh, well, you didn't play for as big of a school. You weren't good enough to play for a power school and be a star. Your competition isn't as good as it is at these bigger schools. So they're already going into things like the Senior Bowl and the Combine, looking, and the Pro Days, looking to show out. Like, hey, look at my measurables. Let me go into the Senior Bowl and show you what I can do against these so-called top guys. So that extra chip helps too.
I've always feel like that's an unfair criticism, because I feel like if talent is talent, no matter where you at, talent is talent, and talent is gonna seep through. Because just because the competition isn't up to snuff, who's to say it's not up to snuff? Those players play hard too. They want a shot at the league just like you do. Like, they know what it is just like you know what it is. If you're at a small school, they're fighting for that same one or two spots in the draft that you are. So it's even a tougher competition at the lower levels, because it's not that many spots given. Yeah. Other than, because you can have the bag up to the bag up for three seasons at SEC school, and then he plays 1 year and does good, and he gets drafted in the first round. But you have somebody from FCS school, like the Montana schools and stuff, and they've been starting since a freshman, and they've been All-American, 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 and they don't even get a chance.
Yeah. That just makes me think, two guys that I enjoy watching, I guess they'll be honorable mention for me, as a Bucks fan, Ali Marpet. I remember when he got drafted, like, who the hell is he? And then you just saw his work ethic, the type of guy he was. It sucked he retired early. Like, as a fan, it sucked he retired early, because, like, he was really good. Man, this dude is so good. I have no idea where he came from. Didn't even really hear about him until started digging into prospects, and look how he turned out. And then Marcellus Wiley. He had a solid career, but he came from an Ivy League school.
Definitely, yeah. So
you just, like you said, talent's talent.
He had to prove it to guys like that that come from the Ivy. You basically have to prove that you're just one of the guys, because they're going to think you too smart.
Yeah, like, oh, look where you came from. You came from this school, you know, from a pro. Like, who played, like, what players really play there? And then, like you said, like, just the perception of, you know, the stereotype.
Yeah, be like, why are you here? Go be a lawyer. Don't be here. Be a lawyer. You went to Harvard. You went to Columbia. Go be smart over there. Don't be over here in the athlete lane.
Yeah, and then just like the culture of the campus, like, they're looking at you like, we know you're here just for football. But he's actually really smart guy.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
gotta find your way to fit in. So before we wrap up here, you got any last thoughts, sir?
Not too much. A topic that was in the chat that we need to dead on arrival is, now I know a certain person was criticized back when they was first in the league, and that was unfair as well. I wasn't really there for that, but that was unfair, just like the criticism is unfair for a certain coach that played last night. Shout out to Smitty. If you have a concept, if you have a game plan, if you really study for it, and you really study an opponent, and you have a game plan going in, execute that game plan, please. Please execute it. Don't worry about anybody else. Execute that game plan. If your game plan is to play action, if your game plan is to run, don't worry about nothing else. Just execute that game plan, and you're going to win. He said it last night. He had a game plan. He studied Bucknut and how he played, and he executed that game plan to a T. And then you have people worried about it, and then they get upset tonight. So you was worried about the wrong thing. Maybe if you worried about your opponent, just like Smitty did, maybe you wouldn't have taken an L.
Well, I'm behind.
Simple as that.
I'll have to see what was going on because I don't have it open. But I will say, we were talking before the show started, and I think there's one thing as an NDL vet that I think about that is a little is different now than it was back when we were playing in NCAA, 14, 13, whatever. The concept of sim. I think the game of football has changed the way college football is played in real life, and is reflected to some extent in the video game as well. There's so many different things you can do defensively, in terms of play calls on offense. There's things that we didn't even dream of being able to have back when we were playing on the PS2 and the PS3. So sim is always a touchy subject. I feel like as someone that's played in a lot of leagues, not just the NDL, but just someone that's played in a lot of football, it can be a touchy word for a lot of people. I would just ask that people take into consideration when we have the sim convo that the game itself has changed. Football has changed. So the concepts that we may have had of sim ball back in earlier generations of football, they're going to have to change some too, because there are more things afforded to us by the game in terms of adjustments, the types of plays you have on both sides of the ball. I think it's going to have to evolve some too, and it's going to have to continue to evolve because the game, just the way the game is played, is different now. So I just ask that people maybe have a little more of an open mind to that going forward. I know that's a difficult conversation to have, but I feel like that's just it's a sacred word. And I understand why, because we all enjoy playing the NDL for that reason. No one wants to go play. Like I tell you, I have not played a lobby game in forever, probably since the NDL started. Why? Why would I want to? I have a league here where I get a sim-style game. I love it. That's the type of football I want. I want to play against someone where I'm trying to outcoach them, trying to, figure out what I can do to stop them, what areas of the field I need to try to cover, what areas of the field I need to attack. I enjoy games like that, and you don't get that when you're playing in your typical online game, because there's the meta, or it's just, hey, everyone's going for every fourth down or, five wide and just trying to find a lane to run with their quarterback. So.
Facts. I've told the story in the live chat of joining a random online dynasty where there were really no rules. And I played the NDL style throughout, and they hated me. I got all the way to the semifinals of the playoffs playing the NDL way, and they hated me. Oh, they hated me. I used to get cussed out in the chat all the time, to the point where I said, you know what? I'm playing a regular sim style league. What y'all want me to do?
Yeah.
Like, no, that ain't that's the weak way. That's so weak, and you play so weak, and why you gotta run the ball and da 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 da. I'm like,
yeah, imagine running a dime and someone pauses the game. We only run stretches here. How dare you run a dime? You're just trying to chew the clock.
Inside zone? Oh my god, no. Yeah, like it was it was crazy. I had to I could only do one season of that league because I got tired of people cussing me out. What are you doing? And oh my god, all you do is run and this, that, and the other. And you don't really do this, but I beat you though.
Well,
and so yeah, right. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's the last word here. We have a great thing going here on the NDL. Happy for it to be back. I know all of us are. The NDL will continue to be great. Communication. A lot of things, just having to chat after the game squashes a lot of stuff. We have a good thing going here. We've got a great group of guys. We'll continue to have a great group of guys. Long live the NDL.